My name's Tony Wass. I've lived at Mount Foster and it's been in my family since 1924 when it was bought from the Hill family, which was part of the much larger Butterbone station at that time. And I've lived on the property from 1973 until about 2009 when I semi-retired to Warren. And I've been involved in irrigation on the property from the time that I went to live there, because Burrendong Dam was coming on stream and there was an opportunity for me that wasn't available where I was before with the rest of the family. So this was an opportunity for me to get going and raise my family. I remember coming down here with my father and my uncle in 1949, and we travelled across the Mumblebone Plain in a Holden ute, which was very new at the time, and crossing the Mumblebone Plain, which is a long straight stretch, seemed to take forever to a six-year-old boy. But then we crossed the Mara Creek and we came through these large red river gums. The Mara had water in it, and then the river came along the river itself, or the road came along the river itself, and I was impressed by the view of the river and the red river gums. And then we came around a corner and we saw Mount Foster. And, that's something that, I've treasured ever since. In 1962, I was a jackaroo in the district and I wanted to buy a horse for myself. And a man by the name of Mick Boss had a marsh block and he had some horses on that. And I came down here with another fellow and we drove in with our horses to the edge of the old Macquarie River. You couldn't quite drive over it, but we unloaded our horses and rode across what was, I was told, was the old Macquarie River. It was ankle deep on a horse and no more. And then we rode out across the marsh country, flat black soil, for about 3 kilometres. And we came into reed beds. And there was a stream that was about 15 metres wide and flowing full. And that was where all the water in the Macquarie River ran, through that channel. And we rounded up the horses and took them back to the yards. And we each selected an unbroken young horse and took them back and proceeded to break them in. We've been involved in agriculture in this district since about the turn of the 20th century. My family came to Ejelabra. My grandfather became manager there in about 1901, and my uncle bought Mount Foster in 1924, and he went into partnership with my father, and we've run that property, and I've been lucky enough to eventually own it, and it's still in my family in the hands of my son. So we've got a long connection with this part of the country, and the marshes have always been, seen as being, increasingly seen as an iconic part of the landscape. And as an irrigator, I mean, we've been irrigating at Mount Foster since the 1930s in some form or another, but more intensively since the onset of Burrendong Dam. But the marshes have always been there in the background, and having that visit to them, quite early on in my youth, I've sort of appreciated them, and increasingly they've been held up as being a vital part of the landscape. And as an irrigator and as an extractive water user, I've had a belief that if we were portrayed in some quarters as being a problem for the marshes, then I've always had a feeling that we had to be part of the solution, and we had to understand the marshes, and we had to learn what made them tick. So I've always had that interest in them for that reason. I mean, the landscape has changed since white man's been involved with it. There's been overgrazing. There have been rabbits. There are all sorts of those small changes, and water use in the marshes has certainly changed with the advent of Burrendong Dam. It doesn't get some of the medium floods. It gets the big floods, and it gets not so much the medium floods, but on the other hand, it gets controlled water through dry times, which would it did not get otherwise. And so that it actually always now has a core area which is kept moist and is a core, you know, sort of vital part to kickstart the marshes and there and its life cycle. You know, when better times come, they're Ramsar listed, and since that Ramsar listing, I mean, they've become an iconic part of the public mind. And the public have always wanted to come and see them. You know, what is the Macquarie Marshes? We want to go and see it. And that's been very difficult because 90% of the marshes are privately owned, and the other small part is a nature reserve held by National Parks and Wildlife and is not publicly accessible. We've noticed of recent times that there's a hunger for people to want to come and see them. You know, people inquire at the Warren Tourist Centre, how can I go and see the Macquarie Marshes? That happens on a daily basis. And people have heard about them, been told what value they have, and they want to go and see it. What is it? Why can't I go and see it? And up to date, it's been almost inaccessible unless they have some connection with a local landholder. Burrima has an important input into that debate because it was bought so that we as people, and it's owned by a trust and comprised of people who live up and down the valley and beyond, and those people were motivated to buy it because they were seen as they were connected to irrigation industry. The irrigation industry was publicised as being the problem of the marshes, which I don't believe is the case, but nevertheless, that's the way it's been portrayed. And so when the opportunity came to buy Burrima, that group of people jumped at the opportunity to be able to access the marshes for themselves and access it for other people. And more recently, you know, we've had that opportunity and we have the opportunity to open it to a wider population, a wider audience. The changes in the landscape on Burrima over that period since we've owned it, and we destocked it immediately, and it's never been stocked except by feral animals and others, but it's had no grazing pressure on it at all. And the changes in that in the first 3 years, even in the middle of a drought, were quite dramatic. And we've done both passive and active work to rehabilitate this landscape, and we've fenced off small areas as demonstrations to exclude all access by the native and feral animals, and again that the increase in plant diversity and opportunity has been, you know, extraordinary. Beyond our expectations. It does require, you know, careful management, and it requires an understanding of what the dynamics are. So I don't like to get into telling other landholders what they should or should not do, but I'm very happy that we have demonstrated on this property, you know, what can be done and what can be rehabilitated by doing the sorts of things that we've done over time.